Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Exiled Mark by Philippa Norcross and Michael Anderley. Narrated by Amanda Ronconi. Chapter 1. The rain and sleet were lashing the window Maggie sat next to so strongly that she could barely hear Charlie on the other end of the phone line. Hang on a sec. She hoped he could still hear her. I'm gonna move. The storm picked up and I can't hear you. He said something, hopefully a confirmation, which she half caught as she hopped off the windowsill and headed deeper into the home's interior. Maggie was still at the Crossroads farm in the middle of nowhere in the Maritimes, sheltering under the auspices of its owners, Lyle and William. They were also guardians of the Crossroads. Only a couple of days before, Maggie and her friends had cast a huge magical working to bring her brother's soul back from wherever it had gotten caught in Maggie's subconscious, after having been unintentionally put there by the weird wards and anchor spells surrounding their mother's childhood home. When she put it like that, the events of the last week seemed far more impressive and weightier, Maggie realized. A lot had transpired. That wasn't counting the discoveries she'd made. Her mother descended from a line of incredibly powerful time mages, who also happened to be enforcers and jailers for one of the most extreme and cruel vampire lords in history. Her family had pushed themselves through time and space to create an enclave where they could hide. Maggie's father had been watching her, and possibly Matt, for God knew how long, and had shown up out of nowhere with the exact spell they needed to save Matt. Although it might not count as a true discovery, there was also the fact that the entire shifter population of the Americas, and probably the rest of the world soon, was out to get Maggie because she was a female shifter, and nobody knew why. Maggie and company had a good guess on that one, but that was mostly beside the point. Nobody else knew, so they wanted to get their hands on Maggie and kill her, marry her, experiment on her, all of the above. Maggie blinked and realized she hadn't been listening to Charlie. Hi, Charlie, sorry, I zoned out there for a second. Did you say anything?
Only that I could still hear you fine, and that you're being absolutely daft if you don't think you can come hide yourself and your kin here,
came the Scot's reply.
You're not with it, are you, lass?
No, I'm not. She slumped onto a cushioned bench in a hallway. It seemed that Lyle's and William's farmhouse shifted and altered with the days. She was pretty sure this bench hadn't been here the night before. Since the homestead sat on one hell of a configuration of ley lines, and there were treaties and agreements with the Fae and indigenous magical peoples and creatures of the area dating back for longer than living memory, this didn't surprise Maggie. It still caught her off guard sometimes. I'm running scared, and I hate bringing danger to my friends. I feel like that's all I've been doing for months now. I have to be honest. Part of me wants to run into the woods here and never come back.
I wouldn't recommend going to live with the fairies.
Charlie sounded highly amused. Maggie could envision his eyes crinkling and his lips twitching, even 6,000 kilometers away.
There are plenty of stories about that. I'm sure you've read a few. Wouldn't want you to end up like poor Bottom.
No fairy queen is worth being turned into a donkey, Maggie chuckled. Seriously, Charlie, a rogue shifter is very different from the worst of the worst. I have no idea who might be coming after me. We could be in for more attacks like coal scent, for all I know, and they could come fast and furious.
I've beefed up the wards on the manor and ground since you were last here.
Charlie was the epitome of calm.
Maggie, stop worrying. I recognize that we might be up against some nasty foes, and that they might come at us hard and fast, and with too much frequency to be desired. I still feel confident that I can help in the short term. So stop being an ass and be a family member, like I made you.
Maggie's cheeks warmed significantly, and it wasn't in response to the cold outside.
Ah, right. Thanks. Of course, that's what family does.
Charlie sounded too self-satisfied to be allowed. Now, when shall I tell Ryan and Neil to expect you? And how many of you exactly will there be?
Good questions.
Maggie looked out the window and grimaced at the terrible weather. As soon as this storm lets up, depending on what it leaves behind, we'll head for the airport. From there, well, I imagine Shelton will charter us a magical jet, which means the day we leave will be the day we arrive. I'd like to stop in Montreal and get some of my things and Pharaoh's, because I didn't anticipate being on the run for this long when I left home. But that might not be an option. I realize that's awfully short notice, though, so is that okay? Do you need more time?
Charlie laughed. No, we don't need more time.
Remember, Lamberton Manor is set up as a dormitory for university students. We don't usually get people dropped on our doorstep overnight, but we can handle it if we do. And family is always welcome. We only want to make sure we're ready for you.
Okay, that's a relief. Thank you, really.
Maggie exhaled. Then I'll keep you in the loop on our departure time and what's going on.
Great.
As to how many of us? Maggie cast her gaze in the general direction of the kitchen. The telltale sounds of meal preparation came from down the hall, the clink and clatter of utensils, bowls, and cutting boards, the shift and scuffle of shoes on tile.
Pharaoh and myself, for sure?
Shelton will probably come with us, but I don't know if he'll stay. I hope I can convince Liam to come too, so definitely two, possibly three, maybe four.
Charlie laughed again. We'll have rooms ready for all of you. Do you and Pharaoh want to share, or would you all like separate rooms?
If it's not too much trouble, could we have adjoining rooms?
Maggie bit her lip.
I don't know what you guys have for suites or whatever, but... Well, if I'm honest, Charlie, I feel a little vulnerable. And I'm trying to manage having my own space while also feeling close enough to my friends. And convincing myself not to completely self-isolate and ignore everyone. Hence the request for an adjoining room instead of a fully single room.
Good on you for fighting your fears, Max.
Charlie's warm brogue made her smile.
I can assure you that Lamberton Manor will be a much more pleasant stay than a fairy glade. I'll let you get on with your day, and you let me know when you know more. Sound good?
Sounds perfect. Thanks, Charlie. I owe you one.
Ah, I've stopped counting either way.
See you soon, Maggie.
See you.
The line beeped as it went dead, and Maggie stuck her phone in her pocket and sighed. She hated feeling like she was taking advantage of her friends. Ever since Matt had died, she'd felt caught in this mire of being unable to take care of her shit, and this new set of shit wasn't helping matters whatsoever.
I'll head back tomorrow.
Liam put his knife and fork down on his plate.
Thank you so much for letting me stay, but it's time for me to get home.
You're most welcome,
William began, but Maggie interrupted him. Excuse me, mister. She pinned Liam with a look.
You're coming with us.
Liam looked skeptical.
I don't know your friends in Vancouver, Maggie. I appreciate the offer, but it wouldn't be polite of me to make any assumptions about their hospitality. I'd be barging in.
I already told Charlie you were coming with us, and he's fine with it, she informed him. So, really, you'd be being rude if you didn't come. Liam looked uncomfortable.
That's not quite true.
Matt chided her.
Don't lie to him, Maggie. That's shitty. You know how seriously shifter packs take hospitality.
It's not a lie. Not quite, she replied. Charlie is fine with it.
If you have to say not quite, it's a lie, he flatly countered. Tell him the truth.
Okay, that's maybe a slight exaggeration, she admitted. I told Charlie I hoped you'd come with us, and I asked if that was okay. He did say he's fine with it.
Fine with it like if I have to, or fine with it like the more the merrier?
Liam narrowed his eyes at her.
Because I am not interested in staying where I'm not welcome.
The latter, Charlie would say if he wasn't sure about a guest. 100%. Liam thought it over, then nodded.
All right, I'll come with you. To be honest, his cheeks flushed. I wasn't looking forward to going home anyway.
I know that feeling, Maggie grimly agreed. Sometimes home is really, really awkward. Vacations are nice, or so I hear. Liam laughed, all discomfort gone.
Somehow I doubt this will be anything approaching a vacation.
Pharaoh's attention was on the kitchen window, where the storm still raged. She made a face.
Anything counts as a vacation if you compare it to this trip.
Oh, don't say things like that,
Shalton groaned.
Everybody knows you don't say things like that.
The conversation turned to recollections of vacations gone awry, and Maggie sat back in her chair to let the flow of speech wash over her.
I'm glad Liam agreed to come, she told Matt. I think it'll be good for him to have some time away from the pack. Some time to consider who he is.
Maggie, are you trying to fix a wounded little duck?
Matt sounded amused, but not unkind.
Maybe.
She averted her eyes, even though Matt was nowhere they could see each other.
Not important right now?
They left the next afternoon. Pharaoh and Shalton had made a trip to the bed and breakfast in the little bay town where they'd stayed before hiding out at the farm. They had packed up their things and bid goodbye to the ladies of the house, so the whole company could hop in Shalton's Aston Martin and make double time from the farm to the airport. It was a straight shot, given that the car could fly.
I thought flying cars were only in books.
Liam ogled the countryside through the window as Shalton banked them into the clouds.
This is incredible.
I try not to use it much. Terrible on mileage, if you can believe it.
Shalton tisked under his breath at the readout on the dashboard console.
You'd think the lack of friction from the ground would make it better, but no.
Maggie wasn't listening. She was staring at the ground, much like Liam. But unlike him, she wasn't only looking at the view. No, she was looking for her father. She couldn't stop thinking about him watching her, since he'd admitted he'd been doing so for a long time. Was he down there now? Had she had a lupine shadow for years? How terrible of a detective was she if she'd never noticed?
I think it's more to do with the fact that he's too good at disappearing, Matt grumbled. Don't sell yourself short.
Maggie watched the gray blurs on the ground rather than acknowledging Matt's comment. They looked like snow and slush, but their dad might be down there, and she'd never know. Chapter 2 Shalton had his magical jet waiting for them when they arrived at the airport.
How are you explaining these expenses to your supervisors?
Liam marveled at the sleek aircraft on the tarmac.
I don't know much about what you do, but I can't imagine random trips from the East Coast to the West Coast slip under the radar.
This is nothing, Shalton chuckled. There are times of the year when I have to make it from one end of the continent to the other 2 or 3 times a day. And the people I work for live in some of the strangest places, trust me. No one will bat an eye at where I'm going, when, or how many people I take with me. There are serious perks to the job I do.
Yeah, but when do you do it these days? Maggie looked skeptical. Lately, it seems like all you do is follow me around the country and pull my ass out of the fire. Not much time in there for managing vampiric business accounts.
All I need's a phone, most of the time.
Shalton shrugged.
Plus, I have my laptop with me. Otherwise, I call Nick.
Nick? Your butler? Really?
He knows his stuff.
Shalton's smile turned enigmatic, and Maggie knew they weren't likely to get any more out of him.
Come on, let's get in the air.
They did so, and made a stop in Montreal. They hadn't given up on the apartment there yet. They still had a couple of months' rent paid up, which meant there would have been no point in packing up anyway. So Pharaoh and Maggie had the opportunity to replenish their suitcases. "What about you guys?" Maggie asked Shalton and Liam while they sorted through the stack of takeout menus on the kitchen counter. "Don't you need to get more stuff? I know Pharaoh and I are the ladies in the group, but there's a difference between overpacking and not packing anything. I don't think I've ever seen either of you with a suitcase." Shalton laughed.
"Magical carry-on bag. It connects to a matching bag back home. I text Nick what I want and he puts it in for me. Works like a charm."
Maggie's jaw dropped. "You can get those?"
"Sure can. Cost a pretty penny, but they exist. Of course, you need someone trustworthy on the other end to put things in for you. Wouldn't work without someone on the other side."
Maggie grumbled at the largesse of the rich and her lack of a roommate who stayed home. She skewered Liam with her gaze. "What's your excuse?" Liam shrugged.
"I don't own that much to begin with. Living up in the settlement with the pack, we only get what we need, and we usually run it into the ground before getting more. I'm used to getting by with the bare minimum. That said, I hope I can do a load of laundry at Lamberton Manor."
"You most certainly can," Pharaoh assured him, coming into the living room just beyond the kitchen with her suitcase. "Maggie, quit bothering these two and go pack." Maggie duly went and packed, still grumbling. They flew through the night and arrived in Vancouver the next morning. They took a cab from the airport to Lamberton Manor, where the driver was only too happy to chatter about all the interesting sorts that went to the university in the city. They claimed they were in for a conference on lore and mythology, so they walked right into it. "Are people in Vancouver extra weird, or is it just me?" Maggie listened to the driver enthuse about the students he'd driven into town the other day, a human rights scholar and a biomechanical engineer.
"I think people in Vancouver are generally considered a little weirder than most, but not as weird as some. Also, it depends on your rubric," Matt replied.
"Fair enough." Liam was appropriately impressed by the Lamberton family estate.
"This is big enough for a whole damn pack," he observed as they walked through the main gates.
Shalton paid the taxi behind them.
"I hope the Lambertons are ethical stewards."
"I'm pretty sure they are. But you know, I never thought about it," Maggie admitted. "I know they keep a pretty wide berth of green space between the house and the city. I think Charlie mentioned it being a mutual nature conservation effort. But it's also a barrier between the magicals and amagicals."
"Are all the students they board magical?"
"I believe so," Pharaoh replied. "They host the culinary school on occasion, which isn't magical, but any students who stay in the house are magical."
"I think there's a scholarship program, too," Maggie added. "I can't remember the requirements, but I remember Charlie telling me about it. A lot was happening at the time."
"A lot is always happening in your life," Liam said with a wry chuckle. "I've never met someone with as much going on as you."
Maggie stuck her tongue out at him. "I think you're a little biased. Life in the Bitterfur settlement must be more chill than most modern life."
"That might be," Liam admitted. "I'll give you that, but we're still plenty busy."
They walked up to the main doors as they opened, and Charlie Lamberton, in all his curly, red-haired glory, walked out.
"Maggie,"
he cried, and spread his arms.
"Welcome back."
"Thanks, Charlie. I wish it was under better circumstances." Maggie came in for a hug, which her friend gladly gave. "One of these days, I'm going to be on a real vacation."
"Come in, come in."
He beckoned them forward as he moved toward the doors, with an arm still around Maggie's shoulders.
"Pharaoh, James, good to see you again. Liam, I presume?"
"Liam McMillan."
Liam stepped forward and shook Charlie's hand as they stepped into the entryway.
"Pleased to meet you. Thank you for extending the hospitality of your house."
"It's my pleasure,"
Charlie informed him firmly.
"A friend of Maggie's is a friend of mine."
He gestured to the side where his butler, Ryan, waited. Despite looking like he wasn't a day over 20, Ryan always had the air of someone who'd been a butler for at least 50 years.
Ryan will show you to your rooms. I'm sure you're exhausted after a red-eye flight, even if it's private. Neil will have brunch ready in an hour, but you're welcome to go down to the kitchens and grab a snack.
You're a wonderful, wonderful man, Charlie, Pharaoh gratefully replied.
I need tea like no one's business.
Maggie went to follow Ryan with the rest of them, but Charlie held her back.
Maggie, a word with you, please?
Maggie's heart sank as Charlie pulled her into his study.
What's wrong?
Nothing's wrong with me.
Charlie nudged her into a chair and went to the drinks cupboard behind his desk.
But you need a drink, and we need to chat.
He poured her a finger of brandy. It was 9 in the morning, after all, and set it on the desk in front of her.
I know brandy's not your favorite, but I think you need something to loosen your tongue.
Maggie picked up the glass, swirled it, and sniffed it. The promise of strong liquor and the taste of mud and wood made her eyes water, but it distracted her from the damp cold that had worked its way into her bones on the East Coast and hadn't abated. She took a sip, blinked back the burning in her eyes, and surprised herself by admitting,
Charlie, I'm always leaning on people. Shelton, Pharaoh, now you. I appreciate your hospitality, don't get me wrong, but I feel like I should be handling this on my own.
He looked at her while sipping his brandy, enjoying it far more than she did.
You're not leaning on people, Maggie. You have friends who are there for you because you've been there for us.
Now that you've gotten that out of your system, I expect never to hear such nonsense again, and I have something to show you.
He motioned toward an adjoining door and led her into the room beyond. Inside was a boardroom of sorts, with a huge table in the center. It lit up as Maggie approached and rendered her speechless. It was the ultimate statement piece, made from a single piece of wood, oak, maybe. She wasn't well-versed enough in wood to know. It had to be at least 12 feet long. And 5 feet wide. A gorgeous world map made of inlaid wood and mother of pearl decorated it, and electronics informed by magic enhanced it further. It was a damned hard thing to do, and not something that came cheap. Matt whistled in her head, and she had to agree. The value of the materials alone was huge. And the skill it would have taken to build it was off the charts. Holy shit! She thought it was rather eloquent.
It is rather beautiful, isn't it?
Charlie grinned.
I'm not here to show off. I'm here to show you something you might find interesting. Or alarming. Guess we'll find out which.
Because that's not ominous at all. Maggie pursed her lips as she drew closer to the table.
I see groups of lights.
What am I looking at?
Unusual gatherings of shifter packs around the world.
Charlie's tone soured significantly.
I started paying more attention to them after your last visit, for reasons I'm sure you can understand. I've been paying particular attention to some of the more orthodox packs, and the ones with legends about female shifters.
I see. Maggie stood beside the table, with her hands splayed on its surface. One rested below the Cape of Good Hope, the other off the southeastern coast of Australia.
She almost felt bad touching it, like she should have washed her hands first.
What have you noticed? Standing opposite her across the table, with his hands over the Arctic Circle, he leaned toward her. The lights played across his face as he spoke.
They're all moving. They're all going to be coming for you.
Maggie sighed.
I was afraid of that.
You know that's why I can't stay.
In the long run, I agree.
He pushed off the table and came back around to her.
You need a plan, and the best way to do that is to have everyone get a good night's sleep
and a solid breakfast in the morning. It's 9 a.m. I failed to see how that disproves my point. Maggie laughed. All right, fine, you win. I guess I am tired. Boy, howdy, wait till you hear what we've been up to.
I can't wait, he agreed, genuinely and earnestly.
But I swear to God, Maggie, if you don't sleep now, I'm going to knock you out. You look like you're dead on your feet. Let Ryan make you a sleeping tonic. I promise you'll be safe here, and you need it.
But the others, she protested. Honestly, I'm going to suggest the same to them. You all look exhausted.
It's terrible manners to say so when people have just walked into your house.
His smile was wry.
Neil's brunches are brilliant any day.
Go sleep, Maggie.
Reluctantly, she agreed and went to her room. The same one she'd been in the last time she was there. Before entering, she paused and looked down the hallway. At Liam's room, she realized. Although she had no idea how she knew with such conviction that his room was three doors down on the other side of the hall. She shook her head and entered her room, leaving the strange moment on the threshold. Inside, she found a plate of simple, filling food, bread, cheese, sausage, and fruit, which she devoured in no time. Once she'd finished, she discovered a hot bath drawn in the washroom between her and Pharaoh's rooms, with a bottle beside it. It was labeled as the promised sleeping tonic and included instructions. She fell into bed 40 minutes later, having taken the tonic as instructed, and her eyes closed before her head hit the pillow.
Chapter 3. When Maggie woke and blearily found her phone, it wasn't on the nightstand, it wasn't under her pillow, it wasn't in the sheets. Oh, it was on the floor beside her bed. Good. She discovered she'd slept for 22 hours. Some strong shit in that tonic, she thought, as she pried herself out of bed.
I feel like I got some rest, too, Matt added.
You sound surprised. Don't you usually feel like you rest when I sleep?
Sort of. It's half and half. I don't feel like I sleep, but I usually feel a little less frayed around the edges. Does that make any sense?
As much as anything about our situation makes sense. Maggie chuckled as she looked at herself in the mirror, or looked at Matt, which was how she thought of it at the moment. Her phone screen lit up with a text notification from Charlie, and she peered at it on the bathroom counter.
Breakfast ready shortly. Come down whenever.
Maggie's stomach growled. Unsurprising, given that she'd technically missed two whole meals, and shifters tended to make a point of not missing meals.
That's not entirely true, Matt countered. Shifters who live in packs, especially hunters, tend to follow the eating habits of their animal counterparts. For wolves, that means feast and famine. You eat what you hunt. Then you might go without food for a long while. Even in settlements? Maggie was skeptical. It seemed like the Bitterfurs ate on regular human schedules.
It's probably different for settlements, Matt admitted. The women and children would eat at normal mealtimes. Non-shifter men, too, but some packs run more feral.
Fair enough.
She splashed water on her face, brushed her hair, gathered it into a ponytail, and called it good. She headed down to the dining hall and grinned when she opened the door. Neil had buffet tables set up along the wall, and from the looks of it, it was a breakfast fit for hungry shifters. Pharaoh and Shalton were already sitting at one of the dining tables, and their plates were full. Maggie descended upon the buffet with all the tact of a starving, well, of a starving wolf. She was midway through piling her plate high with sausages and bacon when she realized she might be coming on too strong and slowed her roll, and only took two omelet rolls. She was debating what kind of toast she wanted when Liam entered the room and made an inarticulate sound of joy. She turned toward him and raised her eyebrows quizzically. Never seen breakfast before?
This is like home on a flight day.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?